Morning. Government Operations and Elections Committee is in order. We do have a quorum. Representative Simon, did you get a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I'll move the minutes.
Representative Simon moves the minutes of Thursday, March 1st. Any corrections, changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the approval of the March 1st minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? Minutes are approved. We're going to take these out of order today because I think Representative Hilty's bill will be a little quicker. Representative Simon?
Before we start, can I just take care of one piece of housekeeping?
Oh, sure.
Just members, Madam Chair, and I don't want anything I say to be interpreted as a criticism of you. It's not. But on Thursday, we're going to be hearing, again, a constitutional amendment on photo ID. That's fine. I understand that. What I don't understand is what exactly we're going to be hearing, because what is in the schedule is House File XXXX, which matches up with Senate File 1577. Now, Representative Kiffmeyer now has four constitutional amendment bills. Four times she has introduced bills on a constitutional amendment on this subject. There was House File 1662, introduced May 4th of last year. House File 1597, introduced on February 15th of this year. And then yesterday, two more constitutional amendment photo ID bills. March 5th, 2012, she introduced House Files 2639 and House Files 2644. And now I'm told that none of those four are the bill that we're going to hear on Thursday. Not your fault, Madam Chair. You're doing what you have to do. My point is, can we have a little reverence, just a little bit, for the Minnesota Constitution here? This is not some consent calendar bill. This is not some quickie agency bill. This is the Minnesota Constitution. And what I'm being told is the bill that we're going to hear to amend our founding document has not even been introduced, and we're going to hear it on Thursday. So, not your fault. I'm not blaming you or your staff. I'm saying what this looks like is a real lack of reverence or even respect for what we will obviously do on Thursday, which is seek to amend our founding document. I'm told that the bill hasn't even been introduced yet. We don't even know what we're going to be voting on. So I would like an explanation from someone here as to what we are going to amend and what language we're going to deal with, seeking to amend the Minnesota Constitution. Apparently four constitutional amendment bills on photo ID are not enough, and we need a fifth, and we don't even know 48 hours beforehand what that fifth constitutional amendment bill from Representative Kiffmeyer is.
Oh,
a little reverence, a little respect.
And I appreciate that, Representative Simon. Perhaps someone could track down Representative Kiffmeyer for a more clear answer. My understanding is the constitutional amendment bill that we'll be hearing, the intention was, I think there was a mistake in what bill was dropped because the jackets didn't match up. We'll be hearing the constitutional amendment bill that matches up with the Newman bill in the Senate. I believe it's the same. It's the same as the DE1 amendment. Do we have the language?
It has not been made public, but it will be made public
shortly. We do have the correct language, and I think it was just a misunderstanding. And I think it's the same bill. I think it's just that the bill number has been confusing because, as you know, the jackets have to match, and there was some misunderstanding there. I'll have to get clarity, and that's a fair question. We can get clarity from Representative Kiffmeyer. But I do know that we will have the language shortly, and it's going to be a DE1 amendment, I believe, and we will get that out as soon as we are able.
Okay.
Is that fair? Would you know? Do you have the time? Do we have it? We'll try to get that posted by 1 o'clock. Can we post the DE1 language itself?
We
will post the DE1 language itself, so then we will have a couple days. And it certainly, as you know, wasn't my intention to do that, and I think there was some communication problems. Would you like me to try to track down Representative Kiffmeyer to explain it to the committee, or was that sufficient?
Madam Chair, I don't think that's necessary. I just think if we're going to do something as major as discuss amending the Minnesota Constitution, it would be nice to know 48 hours in advance which version of the language it is. And again, I want to reiterate, it's not your fault. You, I understand, in this situation are kind of the traffic cop. Mm-hmm. I don't blame you at all, so I want that very clear. You've been nothing but fair, and I think you've dealt really well in terms of communications, you and staff. My frustration probably goes deeper and beyond that, but this is a big deal, and we ought to treat it that way. And I understand where the votes are and what's going to happen. None of us here are naive. The point is, I think we have just a little bit more reverence than doing something like this so on the fly with something that's so important, because there are people who feel very strongly about it, and because it's a constitutional change, no matter what the issue, it's a really big deal. And so after four bills being introduced, none of them being the one apparently that matches up with the Senate file, and that one not yet introduced, you can understand how that might puzzle some of us. So thank you. I take you at your word, as I always do, that you will, as soon as you get it, give us the language.
We will, and I do think the one that matches up is identical to the two that have already been dropped, but I think that regardless of that, it is going to be an amended delete all anyway, so your point is well taken, but we will try to get that posted by one. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to what Representative Simon was talking about, this, I know Rory talked to me earlier today, but I would just like request a little bit of leniency on the 24-hour rule that we have for amendments, because I don't know if we have, until we get the delete all amendment, we will not know what if there are going to be amendments that might be intended. And I just would ask for some leniency for that. The 24-hour rule, be so that we have enough time to look at it and if amendments are wanted.
Representative Nelson, just give me a second. I'm not sure how long it takes to copy and whatnot, so let me just check with staff. Representative Nelson, would 5 o'clock work the night before? Would that give you enough time to, if you get it by 1?
Well, the issue with it, I'm thinking right here, is that tomorrow is with the everything being shut down till we get to session tomorrow with the, because of the funeral and everything else. That even, you know, if we get it, it's I'm not sure how much what amendments we may or may not have, but I'm just with the time frame we're talking about here, without seeing the language and not having the language of the delete all, that with everything going on the next couple of days, that just some leniency on that.
Representative Nelson, that's fair enough. We will have it today at 1, and so it would be tomorrow at 5, so that would be, you know, roughly 26 hours. Check my math here. But we'll try to be lenient. I just want to make sure that there's enough time for our side also to get any amendments and for there to be enough time to print and stuff. But fair enough, and you've been very fair on leniency on amendments to meet the needs of interested parties. So I appreciate that.
And Madam Chair, as Representative Simons, I understand it's not you and it's not the committee here. It's stuff outside of your control. So I appreciate the leniency and I appreciate the understanding.
Oh, okay. Oh, and you know, as long as we're on housekeeping, I did want to point out, because of you just brought that up to mind, the funeral tomorrow. Because we do have the committee deadline coming up, we will have to meet tomorrow night. So we'll be meeting at 6 o'clock in room 300 South. So I think if we could get the amendments by the end of that committee hearing, that would give allow for a few more hours before the hearing on Thursday, if that's okay. Also, I'm sorry, good thing we have staff here to help out. Also, because of the deadline coming up, we're planning on having a hearing on Friday morning as well. I know the rural members especially are glad to hear that. Probably it will be 9 o'clock, and we'll be posting the bills. And it is because of the short session we're having and the bill deadline next Friday, the following Friday, that we're expected to get some omnibus bills. And hopefully that will lighten our load a little bit from having to have all evening hearings next week. So if you could just kind of plan accordingly that this the next few days and next week might be some long hearings. All right. Any other housekeeping items? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go on to Representative Hilty's bill, 2320. Would somebody like to move Representative Hilty's bill? Representative Scalzi moves House File 2320 to your bill, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 2320 is a very simple bill that would reinstate the ability of the Carlton County Commissioners on behalf of the unorganized township of Sawyer in Carlton County to levy for upkeep funds for the cemetery in Sawyer. This is something that was in place from 1999 through 2009, and there was a sunset at that point. Madam Chair, I really have no recollection of this.
I'm sorry, Representative Hilty, we're trying to figure out if the microphones are on up there. I can hear you, but it doesn't. I don't know if that is recording.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Proceed.
I really don't have any recollection of this from 1999. I must have been involved in it. So I can't explain why there was a sunset, but considering that there is no sunset on the cemetery, it sort of makes sense to have the ability to levy for its maintenance in an ongoing manner. And that's what this bill would do.
Members, are there any questions for Representative Hilty? No, I guess we forgot to say where we're moving the committee to. Does it need to just go to the general register?
Madam Chair, I suspect that it needs to go to local taxes.
Okay.
Since it is a tax issue.
Would that be property taxes?
Property taxes, yes.
Okay, seeing no questions, Representative Scalzi will renew a motion that House File 2320 be recommended pass and be referred to the Property Tax Division. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Thank you for your patience, Representative Hilty.
Thank you very much.
Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, there is a DE3 amendment for this. Would you like to move the bill and then the DE3?
Yes.
Okay. I move House File 2244 be passed and moved to the Committee on Ways and Means after today's discussion.
So moved. And then you can go ahead. It looks like the DE1 is a delete everything, so.
That's the DE3 amendment that I'd like to move. And it should be included in committee members' packets as well today. I'd like to move the DE3 amendment for 2244, please.
Since this is the bulk of the bill, if it's all right, we'll go ahead and take a vote on this first and then go through that bill instead. All those in favor of the DE3 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Is that your only amendment?
That's correct,
okay.
Madam Chair.
And then to your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, members. And I'd like to give a little bit of background on this. I have been in the legislature for just a little over a year. One of the things that I've discovered in working with other counterparts on both the GOP and the DFL side of the legislature is that time of incorporation of the state of Minnesota as a state, certain lands were set aside in each township for the purpose of benefiting public school children in the state of Minnesota. And those students that we're talking about are public school students. And in the state of Minnesota, we actually doubled down. Instead of dedicating just one section in each township in the state of Minnesota, we dedicated two sections in each township for the benefit of the public school students in the state of Minnesota. I have sitting next to me someone who has been working on this issue long before I got here to the legislature, Representative Denise Dietrich. This is a truly bipartisan effort that we are undertaking this year to work on what we see as some housekeeping that can be done to better manage and promote the trust lands in the state of Minnesota for the benefit of public school students. We've been through two committees already, and at each of those committees I've taken some notes, and I've also heard what members have said some of their concerns were, and that's why we have such a lengthy DE3 amendment. One of the issues that has been raised is whether or not the whole concept is constitutional or not. We went back and we've determined that that is a gray area as to whether or not the state constitution or the federal constitution or the U.S. Constitution would take precedence. To avoid that issue, we have taken other steps in the DE3 amendment to modify the management structure that could have otherwise been construed as unconstitutional. One of the things that we're looking at doing in this is taking trust lands, which are currently under the management of the Department of Natural Resources, and moving them under a separate board here in the state of Minnesota that would be appointed by the governor in the state of Minnesota. That committee would end up having 5 members who would have expertise in areas of minerals, forestry, real estate, education, finance, and the like, because this is the scope of the assets that we have. These members that would be on the school land trust board would end up being appointed, as I said, by the governor, who would then have the opportunity to be on the board to appoint an executive director that would then oversee the trust lands in a fiduciary obligation or manner on behalf of the students here in the state of Minnesota. Those individuals would be ratified by both the House and the Senate, because we have a constitutional obligation as trustees to look out for the students' best interests in the state of Minnesota. From a legislative perspective, we've also entertained the idea in the bill of moving forward and establishing what would be a student school land trust commission, similar to what we have with other commissions within the legislature, such as the Pension Commission. What would happen would be all legislation that would relate to student land trust properties would come through the legislative commission, which would consist of 12 members, 6 from the House and 6 from the Senate. Each of those bodies would have equal representation with the majority party and the minority party to take away some of the political things that could happen on a commission like that. And so we feel that what this does is keeps the legislature connected to the student land trust properties, as well as brings the executive branch into this process as well. The additional items that we're looking at in here, the gist of the bill, is to go ahead again and to call together the lands that are public trust land for the students in the state of Minnesota, consisting of about 2.5 million acres, and putting that under the jurisdiction of the school land trust board. What I'd like to do at this time is I'd like to turn it over to Representative Dietrich, who can also provide us some background on this bill as well today. Representative Dietrich.
Good morning, Representative O'Driscoll. I want to thank the chair for allowing us the time here today. I take any opportunity that I possibly can to educate people on the issue of school trust lands, because as many of you know, that I strongly believe that Minnesota has not addressed many of the issues dealing with school trust lands as it should. And at some point, I think that we are not obligating our trust obligation. We are not honoring our trust obligations. And I think that that actually puts us in peril of legal issues in the area of trust law. One thing that I would like to point out to you is Representative O'Driscoll put in your packets this flow chart. This is the new organizational structure that we are proposing in the DE1 amendment. There is one thing missing in this flow chart, though, and we are going to correct it. At the top of this flow chart should say beneficiaries. For those of you who aren't as familiar with this issue, the beneficiaries of the permanent school fund and the school trust lands are the children of this state. And that was established in our Enabling Act, as Representative O'Driscoll spoke to, and it is also referred to in the Constitution of the state of Minnesota. So this is just a really easy one-page flow chart that you can look at to see see what Representative Driscoll just described to you. The other thing that is in your packet is the duties of a trustee. I think it is actually immoral to have any school trust land discussion without reminding ourselves the legal duties of a trustee. And there has been much case law throughout the country, and it has established over and over and over again that the same fiduciary responsibilities that need to be honored when administering a private trust applies to the school trust lands of the state of Minnesota. And so there are a couple of them that I would like to just point out, because I think you might hear about them over and over today. Just so you know, this came out of the Legislative Auditor's Report of 1998. The first is that a trustee must demonstrate undivided loyalty. And then you go down a couple more, and it says that it must preserve trust property. They must keep trust property separate from other property. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that is, in my opinion, means absolutely no commingling of land or the funds. They must make trust property productive. They must pay income to the beneficiaries, and they must follow the direction of the persons given control of the trust. So I think that those were just worth pointing out before we get started on our discussion. The other thing that I wanted to do before we get started is, if you turn that duties of a trustee sheet over, this also came out of the legislative audit report, and it talks about the difference between school trust lands and other state-owned land. That deals with the commingling issue. You are not to commingle state lands with school trust lands and the assets. So the legislative auditor came out very clearly that different decisions should be made on school trust lands that are made on state lands, and that has not been happening traditionally in our state. So now, to what I would really like to speak to today is answer two questions, because we are in the GovOps committee. The first question and the most obvious question: is the existing structure working in the management of school trust lands? In 1905, the Minnesota Schools Trust Fund was one of the top performing funds in the United States. In 2010, we are in the bottom third of that. When you look at the return on per surface acre owned or the return on per mineral acre owned. And if you would like any more information on that, I can get that to you, but I did not include them in your packets just because this is the GovOps committee. The market fund value and the distribution to our schools have not kept pace with inflation, while our expenses have dramatically outpaced inflation. Our costs need to be reduced, the revenue needs to be increased, parcels of land need to be assessed, traded, or possibly sold, creative solutions on land management need to be explored, recommendations need to be made, discussed, and potentially implemented. But without a one trust director, this level of scrutiny and problem solving does not happen on our school trust lands. In one calculation that I made from 2004 to 2009, if our costs in forestry would have just merely kept pace with inflation, we would have had an extra $4 million to $5 million in the school fund right now as we speak. Many of you have heard me speak before, but I believe that there is an inherent conflict of interest for the DNR when they manage our land. They have mentioned many times that because they manage land for preservation and the natural resources benefits, that sometimes the school trust land gets managed accordingly, and then we are not reimbursed for it. And so that is, in my opinion, a misuse of the trust land. The DNR has admitted many times, and in fact now it's almost gotten to the point of finger pointing, that the legislature, their direction and their limited funding controls or limits what they can do on the school trust land. And then the legislature, I will once again say that this has gotten to the point of finger pointing, the legislature points to the DNR and says they're all doing it wrong. They didn't buy the 14 million acres of land on Lake Vermilion when they should have, and so now there's not 14 million in the fund. So in my opinion, the finger pointing has been going on long enough. In 1981, the Financial Audit Division of the Office of the Legislature had a very scathing report, actually. And the report concluded that the DNR should not have the sole decision-making authority over the use of school trust land, and it recommended that some management oversight ought to be established outside the organizational structure of the DNR. So in response, the legislature, what we did was we created the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. Up until recent years, and I would say about 3 years ago, that committee has neither been consistent or comprehensive in the oversight of the school trust lands. And that also is cited in the 1998 legislative audit report. So the next question I want to address before we move on is, since this is a change in structure here, and it's a pretty dramatic change in structure, I think we need to answer the question, how does the Minnesota oversight compare with other states? Well, the good news is that Minnesota retains 31% of the original 8.1 million acres. It's more than the neighboring states. While most Western states have retained between 60 and 98% of their school trust lands money. Out of 13 states, Minnesota is only one of four that use the same structure and staff to manage both the trust land and the state-owned lands. In most states, there is an independent agency or a separate division within the land management agency responsible for the management of the lands. Minnesota and Washington are the only two states that use the same staff and the same facilities within the same department to manage both school trust lands and state-owned land. Well, but there is a difference between those two because Washington State, honoring its part of its fiduciary responsibility, they maintain separate records for their time and the resources spent on the trust. And at any given time, that information is accessible to the beneficiaries. So let me be very clear. We are the only state that has totally integrated lands and funds commingled within our state while being managed by the DNR. When I referred to the state of Washington, what that means is that they can actually identify management costs that were done on school trust lands. According to the Legislative Auditor's Report of 1998, this is not always the case of Minnesota. In the case of Minnesota, the management of the school trust land is fully integrated with other DNR responsibilities, and the allocation of the real costs used are making a variety of assumptions. And through the information that I have collected on the certification process and how the costs are allocated, in many of the DNR documents, it says right within the document that that the DNR staff are integrated and mixed in with the management of the school trust lands. And so with that, Madam Chair and committee members, I think that I have given my two cents worth on to why I think that a different management structure is needed, and actually it is our trust obligation to come up with a solution. This has been going on for 150 years, and I believe that the Department of Natural Resources, along with the legislature, have continued to turn their head and just make little improvements here and there. And I worry about the future, and I worry about the next 500 years of who is going to be watching this and who is going to make sure that we keep nibbling around the edges, or does it just go away again in the future? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of other things I'd like to share with the committee, then I'll ask to have the opportunity to bring forth some individuals to testify. One of the things that we want to make perfectly clear is that we are not blaming the current administration or the current commissioner of the DNR for this. There has been 150 years of this property in the hands of the state of Minnesota. What we're looking for is the opportunity right now with this administration and this DNR to be able to resolve the issue. And as I said, this has a lot of bipartisan support in the House, and it's been moving forward. I'm pleased to announce that this past week, we've also picked up additional DFL authors and additional GOP authors on this as well. And we're in the neighborhood of 22 authors on this bill. And I continually get asked by other members about this. And as they begin to explore this, they become much more intrigued with what's happening and the efforts that we're doing. So we're pleased with how we're hearing from other counterparts within our own chamber here in the House as to what's happening. And I also want to just summarize that, as we've been before other committees, and Representative Nelson, you are very quick to point out that sometimes people will say they will work to try to resolve some of those things in committees. We have done that as we've come to the Education Committee, which members had questions about citizen involvement on that, and as we came to the Environmental Committee with constitutional issues. So we've worked to try to resolve both of those before we brought them forward here to the Government Operations and Elections Commission. Madam Chair, with that, if you don't mind, I'd like to call a few witnesses.
That'd be fine. We do have one member question. If you wouldn't mind. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Driscoll, Representative Dietrich. I don't use this term really in a derogatory sense, but can you give an example of a conflict of interest where the DNR may have not acted in the best interest of the intended use of the school trust fund?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, when we talk about the idea of a trustee, keep in mind that the property that or lands that the DNR right now has in their charge are about 2.5 million acres of trust lands and 2.5 million acres, excuse me, of other state lands that are in their care. From time to time, there may be minerals that are extracted from those properties. There may be harvesting of timber from those properties. And what happens is the potential exists at this time for conflicts where two parcels of property, one that is within the state of Minnesota's hands and one that's within the trust lands, and the commissioner has to make a decision. Which of these two properties, if they're like, are they going to be moving forward with minerals on extraction, or are they going to be taking the timber from? Under the fact that a fiduciary or a trustee has a higher obligation under law, they have to wholly, solely, and exclusively advocate for the beneficiary, which would be the kids. So in all cases, the DNR would need to defer to those properties that are within the trust lands to be able to fulfill those fiduciary obligations. And we see that that is a potential conflict. They also have the state of Minnesota wilderness and other properties that make up another 2.5 million acres of property that's under their purview as well.
Representative Dieter?
Yeah, thank you. As Representative O'Driscoll said, the trustee would be obligated to act on behalf of the beneficiaries. And for about almost 50 years now, the legislature and the DNR has stood silently while we generated money from the school trust fund and delivered it to the schools, and then we went and subtracted it in the education fund. So it was no net gain to the students for over 50 years. I just did the calculation for 20 years of doing that, and that's over $400 million that would have went to our students instead, got subtracted in the fund. I don't understand a trustee not pounding the pavement every day at this legislature, and every one of us, when we said the oath of office of honoring these trust obligations, why we haven't been screaming about that for the past 50 years. There is about 150 acres of land that is in non-productive WMAs type of land designation, which they should be. They're sensitive lands. They should be. They should be managed differently. But instead of keeping them in our portfolio, the school trust, because of our trust obligations, we should be either trading them aggressively or selling them aggressively. Even according to the legislative audit report, they point out that the DNR, along with the legislature, because of lack of funding, and once again, there goes the finger pointing, because of that they have been slow to accomplish that. One example is the 86,000 acres in the Boundary Waters canoe area. That has been going on for about 30 years. If that land were all sold, we believe it would market about $100 million, and you put that money into the fund, that is real money not going to our schools on an annual basis, and it's been going on for about 30 years. In 2007, the legislature, once again, it's really hard to find out who's accountable here because everybody has their fingers in the pot. We created a minerals management account, and that from that year on is now given the DNR $3 million to manage minerals. There is no certification of that process. We don't know exactly what that money is spent on, and it's not that I doubt the integrity of spending the money, but we as trustees are not doing our fiduciary responsibility when we cannot point to a document that says these are all the expenses out of that fund and this is the benefit. This is what it benefited the fund, because we should not be spending $3 million a year unless we know what it is going for. And according to the legislative auditor, we really don't know when they're in the minerals area, when you're working on minerals, school trust lands, fund, school trust lands revenue generating, and public lands revenue generating. And there has been case law over and over again that you cannot use school trust lands to promote the state or to look for minerals for state mining. I could go on and on. In the area of forestry, I don't think that it is necessary. I can't point to the mismanagement because I'm not a forester and I'm not out there. But from 2004 until 2009, the administrative fees have gone up over 300%, and the administrative fees have gone up 125%. And that means to me that somewhere that there is mismanagement. Do I know where? Can I go and 0.2 something. No, I can't, because I'm here. But I could go on and on, and if you really want some more information on that, you should read the Legislative Auditor's Report of 1998 or the one from 1981.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, in essence, thank you. In essence, what you're doing is trying to promote a more aggressive advocacy for the school trust lands.
Representative Diedrich?
Yes, that is true, Representative Erdahl, and a better return on the dollar. What we are trying to do is create an entity that will know when they spend a dollar on school trust lands, or know when to sell a piece of property, or know when to trade a piece of property, and get a return on the dollar so that it gets put in the permanent school fund, and it generates interest and revenue for our students today and for the next 500 years or forever, as our founding fathers intended.
Seeing no other questions, we'll go ahead and move on to your witnesses then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, again, in your packet, there are a number of different school-based organizations or education-based organizations that are putting their support behind this effort from all across the state. And in the interest of time and discussion and deliberating and vetting this, we will not have all of them appear, but you do recognize that there are letters of support in there. However, I would ask that Grace Kelleher, who is the representing the Minnesota School Boards Association, please come forward and to share some thoughts with us today as well.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent Minnesota school board members. These are duly elected people from around the state that represent all your local schools. We want to thank the chair for having this meeting and thank Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Diedrich for their leadership on this issue. This has been an issue my organization has been part of for the last 5 years and spent a lot of time sitting and listening and learning. In this bill, if you want to make a clear statement of what we're looking to do, we're looking to raise revenue for the students of this state without raising taxes. And this was our forefathers' inheritance to our children. They put this land aside with the idea that school districts would generate revenue off of this. And in fact, we want to see these dedicated funds used better across the state. Representative Diedrich shared with you some quick number facts from 2004 to present that the management fees for the school trust funds have gone up over 300%, and administrative fees have gone up over 100%. We did some quick math in K-12 and looked at our increases over that same period of time, and they were 23.4%. So clearly, education has not had the same luxuries afforded the present fund. With that, Madam Chairman, I will pause and ask for your support going forward. This is the right thing for our kids presently. It's the right thing for all our forefathers going forward. And hopefully in the future, the next 100, 150 years, your children and your grandchildren can look back to this bill and say it was a game changer for kids.
Any questions? Thank you. Next witness.
We felt that we are good with our witnesses and are ready to take others.
Is there a Betsy Dobb? Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Betsy Dobb. I'm the policy director with Friends of the Boundary Waters Wilderness. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. You have in your packet a letter from 14 individuals representing Minnesota conservation and environmental organizations, as well as former DNR administrators, LCCMR members, and members of good government organizations. And this letter outlines in detail some of our concerns about House File 2244. So I will keep my remarks here brief because you can read what we've written in the letter. We would like to acknowledge the mandate of the School Trust Fund to secure maximum long-term economic returns for the school trust lands. And we'd also like to highlight that the law also requires that this be done with sound natural resource conservation and management principles. That is part of the mandate. We feel certain that the DNR is in the best position to manage the school trust lands because it alone of all of our state agencies has the expertise in natural resource and conservation and management. No other agency has that ability. It is clear that legitimate questions have been raised about past management of these lands by DNR. And we have been impressed that in his short time at the DNR, Commissioner Landwehr has stepped forward, is addressing these concerns, and has forwarded a plan to make necessary corrections. We believe that the DNR is the appropriate and best steward of these lands, and that in addition it would be unwise and burdensome to create two new bureaucracies as House File 2244 does to manage these lands. We urge that you let the DNR take the good corrective action that it's proposed and keep management of those lands within that appropriate agency. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Is there Craig Pagel? Good morning. If you could just identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Good morning, Chair. My name is Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. I'm here this morning to also note that the Iron Mining Association is not in agreement with the bill as it stands. Our main concern is duplication of government and expansion of government and how many agencies and groups that each of the mines would have to deal with as they work on different lands. And while I understand it's important on paper to separate these lands so that they're not commingled, the fact is they are in reality next to other parts of mines that are being mined. To go to two different people within that might be right next to each other is going to add one more layer of trying to work through some of the costs and how these lands can be used. I think that's probably our main concern at this point. Of course, we do support education. We pay a good chunk of that, of the monies that go into the trust. And I think the question is more of how is that being managed and being reported afterwards. I guess I just caution that adding layers of government might actually make it harder for those that are the ones actually paying for it. The only other thing I guess, two things I guess I'd add is royalties as an example, if they're, and I understand the concern of the fiduciary requirements. Royalties in the last 10 years have gone from $1.15 to $3.31 on an average. So there has been increases to us. Matter of fact, some of my bosses will tell you that, in fact, the DNR is doing too good in that instance because it's based on world market prices, which don't always reflect what the market prices are in Minnesota. The last thing I would add is it is true that the dollars did go down in 2009 and specifically in 2010 because we pay a year after. There was a recession during that time. Mining actually for the first time in the history of the state stopped for a two-week period. However, projections that I have from the Department of Natural Resources for 2012 and 2013 on through 2015 will be going from, and the numbers I have are a little bit different in that these are the monies that go to the trust compared to what we pay. And that's one of the questions too. But school trust lands will go 2011, 19.6 million, 2012, 27.4, 2013, 28 million, 2014, 25, and 2015, 26.8 million. So there's projections out there, and a lot of that's based on what the value of the iron is and where we'll actually be mining. And again, if we have to work with two different entities of where we're going to be mining, it adds a layer. And if I could, just to the bill itself on the DE, just some clarification as they work through, as an example, on line 5.4 of the DE for 2244 DE3, it says that no revenue from the trust lands, including revenue from severed mineral interest, shall be deposited. I believe they probably mean severed minerals for the school trust lands, not all severed minerals. That might be a clarification in the tax committee, as well as on page 7.31, where they talk about the director, it says trust lands and mineral assets. I would assume they meant on trust lands. And that's what I have, and I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, to the testifier or to Representative Driscoll. As I understand it, we are replacing the permanent school trust fund advisory committee with a legislative commission. Now, to me, that's kind of a lateral change, not an expansion of government. Representative Driscoll, do you view this as an expansion of government?
Representative O'Driscoll?
Short answer, Representative Erdahl, no. What happens right now is, as the name implies, it's the committee that exists right now is advisory. So the suggestions and recommendations aren't required to be taken or followed. If we put a commission in place, it would still have the same, if you will, meetings and things that the advisory committee does, but all of the bills that deal with trust lands would come through there and then be handled similar to the way that the pension commission would be, that there is an omnibus bill that would come forward, or that there would be things that would be vetted out at that level and then brought forward for the legislature to consider it in the aggregate.
Okay, no other questions? Why don't we have Commissioner Landwehr's up? Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Landwehr. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I have been for the last 14 months or so. Thank you for inviting me here today, having taking my testimony. Madam Chair, members of the commission, by constitution and by statute, the Commissioner of Natural Resources is the trustee for the school trust lands. I would offer that that's a sort of a co-responsibility between the commissioner and the legislature, because the legislature, as Representative Dietrich has suggested, also has influence on how we manage these trust lands. But to the point that I must reflect undivided loyalties, that ironically requires that I oppose this bill by virtue of my trustee responsibilities. If I see any action that would result in a decrease of revenues to the school trust fund, my undivided loyalty insists that I must oppose that action. And clearly in my mind, this is a increase in bureaucracy. It's an increase in government. It's a reduction in efficiencies. It is a no net gain in revenues going to the trust. So by all those accounts, which I'll get into in more detail, I must oppose this and suggest you vote against this bill. It's important when we look at the trust lands, the school trust lands, the 2.5 million acres, we recognize that the primary values of those lands are natural resource oriented. We generate revenue primarily from mineral leases, but we also generate revenue from forest timber sales, and we generate revenue from leasing or selling of the lands. Those are all natural resource functions, and I would assert that the Department of Natural Resources is your natural resource agency, and we do the best job. We have the professionals on staff that can advise on how to manage those lands for the greatest return. The school trust fund, I would also point out, is managed by the State Board of Investment, and there are certainly policies around that you might want to investigate in terms of generating greater revenue by nature of the investments that the school board, that the state board administers. But from the standpoint of the lands and the management of the lands, I think that the bill was developed based upon a perception that there's some conflict of interest that DNR has over management of these lands for the maximum benefit to the beneficiaries. I would offer that the department has been managing these lands for more than 100 years. We always manage for future generations, and we manage the trust lands for the beneficiaries. Last year, we contributed $23 million to the school trust fund, which is now about $780 million, again, under the State Board of Investment. And we do it very cost effectively. We have 130 full-time equivalents. It's a number of people that contribute to 130 full-time equivalents that manage 2.5 million acres. And as I pointed out before, that's one person for about 20,000 acres, 30 square miles of land, primarily timber and minerals again. It is very cost-effective when we look at the costs that are reimbursed by the fund. They are either certified in the case of forestry, or they are appropriated in the case of the minerals. The minerals management account, as Representative Dietrich mentioned, is appropriated by the legislature. You have the oversight ahead of time as to what those dollars are being used for. And they are used for the things that benefit the trust. We need geologists. We need GIS specialists. We need contract specialists who can do these leases with companies, as Mr. Pagel referenced. And in the absence of that, you're simply not going to generate any revenue. Similarly with forests. Forests are not just something you go and cut one time and let them regenerate and go back and cut them 50 years later. They require active management, active participation at the time of sale, active thinning, active reseeding, and this is done by 100 or so foresters currently working for the Department of Natural Resources. When you look at the 1998 Legislative Auditor's Report, which was done 14 years ago now, it had recommendations for the department on how we could better manage the school trust lands. It didn't say this department should not manage school trust lands. In fact, to the extent that it looked at alternative management, it looked at the county, whether or not the county governments ought to manage these school trust lands. It advised against that. It said that there were some things that DNR should do to improve its management framework, and I would assert that we have undertaken all of those today. I think when you consider the details of how this baby would be split, there are 5.5 million acres in the state. We're talking about taking 2.5 million acres and putting them into a different agency. It is clear that this will be both expensive, and it will increase bureaucracy. I would offer that if there is a suspicion of either malfeasance or mismanagement of these lands, that the most obvious first course ought to be a legislative audit. We've not had a legislative audit in 14 years. I would welcome a legislative audit to diagnose the problem before we engage in surgery to split this baby. We ought to know whether or not there's truly a problem or whether it's just the grass is greener on the other side, and so therefore we need to do things differently. But when you look at the some of the arguments that are made that demonstrate whether or not DNR is or is not mismanaging, Representative Dietrich referenced $400 million that's not gone into the trust as a result of some action back in the early part of 2000. That $400 million was a legislative action. That was the legislature was directing that any contribution from the school trust to the school system would be reduced by a general fund contribution. So it was took a legislative action 4 years ago to change that so that now the school trust fund, the revenues generated from that, are additive to the school funding formula. It was not something DNR could do. It was a legislative action. The Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness Exchange, we're actively involved with that, as Representative Dietrich mentioned. That was undertaken initially 30 years ago. Ultimately, it was scuttled in part because legislature had concerns about how that transaction should take place. We're hopeful that we can proceed with that transaction moving forward, but you must understand that we're dealing with the federal government. The slowness here with which this proceeds is a function of the federal process, not the Department of Natural Resources' inability to move. And forestry fees, I can't tell you how many times I've heard about the forestry fees, how they've gone up 300% over a period of 4 years, and that there's no rationale for that. The reality is, over that time period, the general fund contribution to the Department to the Division of Forestry has been greatly reduced. As you all know, over the last 10 years, the general fund contribution to the Department Division of Forestry has been greatly reduced. Historically, management of school trust lands was paid for in large part by the general fund. As the general fund has been cut off, it doesn't mean we don't have to manage those lands. We have shifted more and more of those direct and necessary expenses to the school trust land revenue. And that is the sole reason those fees have gone up over the last 10 years is because that's the only place to get the money to do the management that's required. At the same time, revenues have gone down dramatically. In 2008, the market crashed, revenues dropped. Doesn't mean we can stop managing forests. We have to manage forests regardless of whether or not we're getting revenues off them. So you'll see that there is a very big difference in the amount of revenue coming in versus the amount of expenditures going out. Totally explainable, and I would offer you would see this no matter who is managing those lands. Potlatch Corp, which operates in Minnesota, operates in other states as well, is the closest entity that I can find in the private sector that manages land, manages timber, comparable to what the Department of Natural Resources does. From 2007 to 2008, their revenue went from $1.6 billion to $400 million. They saw a 75% reduction in their revenue. Their return, their net return, in other words, their gross revenue minus expenses, is about 10% over the last five-year period. DNR's is 16% over the last 5 years. We're producing more revenue for dollars spent than a privately held company responsible to its stakeholders. So when you look at the bill, look at it very carefully, because here's what I believe it will do. It will decrease the efficiencies. It was referenced that that the lands are commingled. Well, we don't move these lands around. These lands are commingled by virtue of history. The school trust lands are a little less than half of all of the state lands. When you look in northeastern Minnesota, you'll see that we have trust lands adjacent to other state lands. That's not our doing. That's just the way they are. It makes no sense whatsoever to have two different agencies managing adjacent parcels of land with similar practices for similar revenues, and yet that's what this would this bill would do. It would allow for the new department to contract with the DNR, but it doesn't require that. So we could end up seeing, and this has been mentioned several times, the DNR green trucks driving by the trust administrator blue trucks going to adjacent pieces of land and having to do the exact same practices on adjacent pieces of property. It is truly not more efficient. We're doing similar practices on adjacent lands. It does increase costs and the size of bureaucracy. When you look closely at the bill, there is a new board, five members that are compensated pursuant to, I believe it's Chapter 15. They get a per diem and they get $55 a day under Chapter 15. This is a new board, not unlike the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The administrator is a paid position. That's clearly spelled out in there, as are staff that the administrator is allowed to hire. When I think of what a small entity might look like that manages this, even if they do it all by contracting, well, you have an administrator, you're certainly going to have an administrative assistant. You will need an attorney, and this bill references the use of attorney general. We don't bill attorney general fees to the trust right now. There will certainly have to be a website. You're going to need a website administrator, and you're certainly going to need somebody who can write contracts, because all this work is going to be done by contracting. I don't see how you do this for less than five additional positions. Those are all additive. And, you know, give or take $500,000 at current state scale. Not one of those is a forester. You still have to have the foresters and the geologists and the GIS specialists and the people that put out fires and all of those activities that we are currently providing. So when I look at this bill, I see more expenses. I see bigger government. I see more expenses. I see less efficiencies. Furthermore, I see no additional increases in revenue. We have to look at the nature of this land. We have land that is marginal to low-grade timber. A million acres of that 2.5 is peatland. It is not commercially viable land. The million and a half that's left, half a million of it is low-grade commercial timber. A million of it is medium to high-grade commercial timber. We're managing that as effectively as we can. The minerals are being taken out as efficiently as we can get them out. The market is driving that. You can't put more land up for minerals exploration if there's nobody there to take it. And the the land sales, the most developable land that the trust that are in the trust lands are lakeshore. All lakeshore sales must be approved by the legislature. So the hobbling that the department might experience is not by virtue of the department's inability to sell lands. It's because we need to approve everything through this body. So I think, in summary, when I look at this bill, I see virtually a quagmire of bureaucracy, as Mr. Pagel outlined, two different entities with which you have to contract for the same resources. I see no additional return to the trust fund, and therefore, again, I oppose that bill. I would offer in some final thoughts, the department is continuously improving our management of these lands. And a number of examples, we're doing better cost accounting all the time. As we can use digital technology to identify the boundaries of these lands, and none of them are posted, we can identify where the work is being done. We can use better accounting systems to refine how we are accounting. We can use, and we are looking at, new techniques for selling timber. We're constantly trying to reduce our costs and increase our outputs. We can improve our techniques for selling timber, reduce our expenses. We're actively promoting minerals leases, and I'm sure you're all aware of the debate that we've had around leasing additional land for mineral exploration. That is, we are statutorily obligated to not only sell mineral leases, but to promote mineral leasing in the state, and we're actively doing that. We just recently completed, and I signed a commissioner's order that, it, for the first time ever, advises the entire department on how school trust lands need to be considered with respect to the beneficiaries and the accounting and transparency, and how to deal with the conflicts that might be posed when the statute that says we must manage consistent natural resource practices, when that poses a conflict to revenue generation, there is now a process laid out for how we will deal with that conflict. And we are constantly working with the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee, a body set up to provide recommendations to you and to me about how to do a better job of managing these lands. That commission is chaired by one of your own, Representative McFarland. If there are issues that the department need to be considering, that is a place where that can come out. And finally, the BWCAW exchange, as was mentioned a couple times already, actively underway. It is a long-term project under the Forest Service time frame. We'd be looking at 6 to 10 years. No matter how hard I push, in fact, it's probably counterproductive, we're not going to get the Forest Service to act faster than the Forest Service typically acts. But we need to be persistent. We need to be engaged, and we need to keep moving the ball. So in closing, I appreciate the discussion and the opportunities this provides to look at how we do business, how we can improve our business, and we're receptive and open to doing that, and happy to improve anything we can. But I think this bill takes us in the wrong direction. Again, before we do the major surgery that this suggests, splitting the baby, I think a legislative audit, whether it's financial or program, would be appropriate to get the right diagnosis before we start tending to the patient. This bill will expand the size of government. It will decrease the efficiency. It will provide modest return, in my opinion. And for that reason, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I oppose it and encourage you to do the same.
Thank you. Representative Scalzel, I have a few questions, if you won't mind. Actually, before I forget, as I'm trying to chair the meeting, I have several questions popped up in my mind. As you gave your testimony, you talked about the size of government increasing several times, and then the fact that there's going to be 5 additional positions. But I'm looking at this DNR trust fund chart I have here, and it says the total certified cost to the DNR is $8.2 million. And I'm wondering, wouldn't... If there are 5 additional positions, wouldn't some of the staff of DNR need to be eliminated? I guess I'm wondering, how many FTEs do you have that are dedicated to trust issues? And wouldn't, I mean, you make it seem like it's going to be, those people are going to continue to have to do their work on this, plus we're going to have additional 5. And I'm not, that's a disconnect to me. It seems like if you weren't responsible for it, the cost, and I don't know how much of the 8.2 is in FTEs, but if you could talk about that, would be my first question, and I have several others.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, the $8 million is the cost for managing the timber, primarily related to salaries. Those positions, and they've been declining over the last few years. In fact, last year we suggested there were 103 FTEs credited to the FMIA, to the school trust lands. This year there are 95, so we're reducing that number. But you still need those people managing the lands. Again, 2.5 million acres. You still are going to need, give or take, 100 foresters. You're still going to need, give or take, 30 geologists to do the minerals leasing on these lands, unless you're simply going to reduce the management on these lands. You're going to need those bodies to do it. It's, again, one person for 20,000 acres. It is a very huge workload that we've assigned these people, and you're not going to get any significant reductions, in my mind, by reducing the size of that management cadre. On the other hand, if you increase the staffing by 4 to 5 positions by the director, You're taking on new expenses that you're not paying for right now. The trust is not paying for my being here today. The trust is not paying for me as a trustee, but the trust will pay for the new director. It will pay for the staff that the director is required to have, and it will pay for the board. So there is additional expenses, clearly, in the staff and the voluntary board that I believe are going to be on top of the expenses that you need to continue to spend for the management of these lands.
So, Commissioner Landwehr, so 95 FTEs, it seems like there wouldn't be an addition. It may be just be staffed in a different area than the DNR, it seems like to me. But I think I'll move on to my next question. At the beginning, you talked a lot about the idea of a conflict of interest, and that's the part I'm really struggling with. And this isn't due to anything that the DNR does. It just seems to me inherently that there's a conflict of interest between the DNR's mission of conservation and the responsibility of a trustee to get the most bang for the buck in the return for the trust. And that's what I'm really hard, despite your good intentions or anyone's good intentions, I'm having a really hard time understanding how there could not be a conflict. I understand that you've been doing this, but it seems as though the legislators said that other states do this quite differently, and I'm having a really hard time understanding that. And one example, I guess that would tie that in, is you talked about the mineral acreage that's currently leased, and you said there's a debate going on. And I'm not understanding, if your job is to be trustee for the trust, then what would be the debate? It seems like, you said we're looking at that. And I mean, what is the percentage of mineral acreage that's leased, and what would be the goal? What are you doing to maximize this for the trust? Because I think that the legislators would probably argue that you're not doing enough to lease these mineral acreage lands. And I don't know what a dollar amount. I know that those minerals are worth a lot of money, and I believe that would generate a lot. And I don't really have a sense of what you're doing. I guess your language of what there's a debate. Well, I don't understand what the debate would be. My suspicion is the debate is because you have a conflict between conservation and to generating the maximum you can for the trust. And so that's why I think a lot of us have concerns here as to what, and it's to nothing, and it's not to your fault. It's just there's an inherent conflict that I don't know how you avoid. And to me, that's why it seems like it would make more sense to go in this direction. If you could talk about that, and especially your language about the debate, and talk specifically about what you're doing to lease the mineral acreage, what percent, what dollar that, amount that might generate.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, please let me clarify. The debate is not within the Department of Natural Resources. The debate is in this body or in the public at large. The department has been leasing mineral rights for decades. Certainly the Iron Range is a good example of that, and the majority of money that's in the trust right now comes from the sale of iron ore. I fully expect that will continue to be the case. The opportunities that we have in front of us now are additional iron ore extraction. The steel industry is going gangbusters right now, and all of the companies are proposing expansion. The debate is a public debate around, for instance, non-ferrous mining, sulfide mining that you've heard of up in the Iron Range, the Hoyt Lakes area, and Polymet. It's not a debate that's happening within the department. We are proceeding through the studies that will advise, what are going to be the impacts of the mineral extraction, and ultimately the commissioner, me, has to issue a permit to mine, assuming that the company can confirm that there will be no offsite impact. But the debate is huge, and it's happening here. It's if there were no public debate, if there were no legislature, if there were no process for the public hearing, we would continue through the EIS, and we would continue to permitting if the project can be done consistent with Minnesota's laws. That discussion, that debate doesn't change if somebody else manages the trust lands. In fact, that new agency is going to have to get a permit from me if they're going to do a mining project. And they're going to have to go through the same environmental impact statement. They're going to have to go through the same MPCA permits as anybody else is doing. So the debate is a public debate, not one that's DNR initiated or at DNR's wherewithal to eliminate. The department has the primary expertise outside of industry for the minerals in the state of Minnesota. We have a huge, what's called a core library up in Hibbing. It is a huge building that has core samples that have been taken for 100 years across the state of Minnesota. Part of the minerals management account pays for that, maintaining that core library. Why is that important? It's important because any entity that's interested in mining Minnesota needs to know what's underground. The only way they can find that out is by looking at cores. We provide that service. It's one of the expenses of minerals management account that when you question why we're doing spending money on minerals management, it is so that we can promote mining in Minnesota. It is. There is a statute that says the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall promote the exploration and exploitation of minerals in the state of Minnesota. I am statutorily biased towards doing that. But the obstacles that are put in front of us are either legislative direction that we can or cannot do something, or they are the conflict that's posed by the existing statute that says that we will manage as natural resources of the state consistent with sound natural resource practices. That's applied to the school trust lands. It's not a conflict that DNR created. To the extent it is a conflict, is one that is, again, posed by the legislature. But I would assert that because the revenue from these lands are coming from forests or coming from minerals, which can have off-site impacts, that the only way we're going to manage these lands for long-term revenue generation is consistent with sound natural resource practices. You cannot go in and manage timberlands inconsistent with sound natural resource practices and expect to continue to get benefits down the road. It's the goose and the golden egg syndrome. You have to take care of the goose if you're going to continue to get the golden eggs down the road. And just throttling the goose and trying to get all the eggs right now is not going to provide the long-term revenue that the trust needs and that the current management is providing.
So, Mr. Landwehr, do you feel then the DNR is leasing all, is it a reasonable amount of mineral acreage? And you feel that if, I guess I'm still having an issue with the conflict, because you said the conflict is in the legislature, but it seems to me that the DNR's goal of conservation is opposed to your responsibility as a trustee. I mean, I could ask you the question, what is your number one priority? Is it conservation of those lands? Because people that support conservation might not like the idea of the mineral acreage being leased. But that is your number one job if you're as a trustee. So I don't understand how it could be anything other than a conflict. And this isn't, you fell into this position, so this isn't your fault. It's just something that I don't understand and I don't think can be resolved. But I'll move on. I'll go to Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And yes, it certainly is a conflict. And my first question was, why is it that as the DNR puts in the money from the school trust lands, it's deducted from the schools, and you tell us that it was legislative action? And I'm thinking, why are we doing that? Why?
Until 4 years ago, it was changed.
Mr. Landwehr?
Okay, so that's a good change that we had not. I mean, that's an important change. And I'm just in the back of my mind, I'm just thinking that there may be other changes, and a legislative audit report would be helpful for that reason alone. I'm wondering, out of the 1 million acres of peatland, how much of that, because that's almost half of the school trust lands, is that, how much of that is in school trust lands?
Mr. Landwehr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are more acres of peatland than 1 million acres. There are 1 million acres of school trust land that are in peatland, and some of that, again, another hurdle to some of our management, some of that was put under scientific and natural area scientific and natural area designation by the Wetland Conservation Act in 1991. So 180,000 acres were created of SNA by the legislature in 1991. Some of that is school trust lands, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just illustrating again that if there were opportunities to do something with peatland, some of those have been taken off the table for us by virtue of the legislative action. I don't think right now there is any viable market for peat other than horticultural peat. Once upon a time, there was a belief that we could heat with peat, and that market lasted for a few years, but it's gone now. We could try to sell those lands, but most of these lands, the majority of the trust lands, are more than 10 miles from an improved road. So these are not lakefront cabins by and large. They're peatland acres, and really far from a beaten path.
Just
Representative Scalzi.
Mr. Chair, as a follow-up then, also I had a question regarding PILT, and I've been reading the some of the data that was given to us from the Idaho visit, and I remember reading at the time about Idaho and thinking, well, gee, they've got a lot of money, but, you know, they've also got oil, gas, and coal. Timber is not very productive, nor is peat. So I think we're at a disadvantage right away because of the types of lands that we have in school trust lands. But I'm curious, because as I understand it, in Idaho, the PILT money comes out of the school trust lands, and here it comes out of the general fund. So as you look at this bill, does that change that so that some of the PILT money would then come out of school trust lands?
Mr. Landwehr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think you're talking about Utah. And, you know, Utah is a much different situation. They had some stars aligned back in the 80s. They actually were able to swap a significant portion of their original acreage with the federal government because many of their acres were within federal wilderness designation. They threatened to start developing. The federal government was tasked by President Clinton and Secretary Babbitt to do an exchange. By virtue of the exchange, they were able to secure new trust lands that were close to developing areas or new trust lands that were in deposits of oil and gas. So they had an outstanding one-time opportunity to high-grade their resources, and that's what they did. I don't know what happens with their PILT. I believe all of their expenses are now saddled to the trust fund. In Minnesota, the general fund has paid for a significant number of expenses related to trust land management. The PILT obligation is an example. That was $1.6 million last year. My understanding of this new version is that this bill continues to have the PILT paid for by the general fund. The change was necessary because previously the PILT language said lands administered by the Department of Natural Resources shall have a PILT payment. Since this was now a new agency, there had to be that change to allow for the general fund to pay for those PILT expenses.
Representative Scalzi.
And then just as a question about the continual debate that's going on in the public and regarding the sulfide mining. As I read the bill and I'm looking at policies, and it says to optimize trust land revenues and increase the value of trust land holdings, consistent with balancing of short-term and long-term interests so that long-term benefits are not lost in an effort to maximize short-term gains. I don't, frankly, and granted it's limited knowledge, but the knowledge that I have of sulfide mining, I don't know how that could possibly work. And I think that this board would be presented with an impossible recommendation decision, because if in fact a sulfide mining creates sulfuric acid, which would become damage to any of the lands in the future, might be, as from what I've read and understand about it, those lands then would become worthless if they're not able to be used for recreational opportunities or if the water source is denigrated. I just don't know how this board could make those types of recommendations given their policy is to optimize for the future. How would they possibly do that? And it's not something that you can answer, but I do have to commend what you've done so far. It just appears to me that there's work that we have yet to do. You've been handed this school trust land issue, which has been going astray for a good number of years, and I think that it's because of legislative action. We've done things to ourselves that have decreased the value of what we give to our school children, and that's not good. And I just think that there must be some way to solve the situation rather than create a new board that I don't think is going to have the expertise. And I'm just thinking going forward that there must be something we could do in recommendations. And maybe the group that's been working on this, and I know they've been working very hard for a long time on this school trust land issue, certainly we want to give more money to our school children. And we do want to be good trustees of our land. I'm just wondering if there's been a discussion of future work that could be done short of creating a new board with a new director.
Who was that for? Or just a comment, Representative Scalzi?
Well,
It's a good question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there
Commissioner
have
Landwehr.
Been a number of efforts over the years to identify things that could be changed in order to get us closer to, I think, where everybody wants to be. And it's, many of those are legislative. One thing I'll offer is up until 1998 or so, all the trust fund, or the trust fund was invested in bonds, which is great from the standpoint of spitting off annual income, but the fund didn't grow at all. I mean, much of, you know, remember, the State Board of Investment manages the fund. That's where the majority of, that's where the cash is sitting right now. It was changed about 2000 so that the State Board of Investment could be more aggressive in its management. Now, there's always the risk-reward equation, and we want to be careful to not invest too aggressively, for we may see the fund go down. But last year in Utah, they saw a 22% increase in the fund simply as a result of investment. So there are opportunities to manage the money differently that would provide more dollars to the trust. There are things that the legislature could do to help us manage the land more consistent with the trustee responsibilities. One is allowing us to sell Lakeshore without getting legislative approval. Right now we have to get legislative approval on any Lakeshore we sell. The most developable land that the trust owns is Lakeshore, and we have considerable acreage of Lakeshore. So if we are looking for the, you know, if it's timber, taconite, and development, that's the area where we're going to see the greatest proceeds. But right now we're a little hobbled there. The school trust is also the only entity that pays for fire suppression. The state provides fire suppression on about 22 million acres across the state. That's private, county, federal, state, corporate lands, and we don't bill anybody except for the trust. So last year there was $1.6 million billed to the trust for fire suppression. All the other expenses are paid by the general fund. So things like this could be done immediately that would tweak the system and put more money into the trust.
Thank you. Representative Winkler. Representative O'Driscoll, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to respond to some of the comments that Representative Scalzi had made. She's exactly right when she talks about the identification of the value of those lands. The DNR has the ability, as the current custodian, to go out and to do land swaps, and a large amount of that property is located in the northern part of the state. The questions that we have asked in collecting information on this is, do we have a long-range plan to deal with identifying those areas that we'd like to preserve as wilderness that are commingled because the patch quilt work that we're seeing on that, and a plan to be able to then move forward and raise funds to purchase those or to swap lands and putting those in the hands of the state of Minnesota versus the state of Minnesota and the school trust to be able to call those together. We also have the ability to switch those lands to other parts of the state where there may be more productive uses of those. For example, in certain counties in southern Minnesota, we may want to engage in some agricultural operations. We may also want to engage in some wind energy types of things, some renewable resources, which could have also a revenue generator to them. Neither of those are on the table right now because we're focused on minerals and forestry, period. And what we're saying is that we want to be able to broaden the horizons by putting this new board out there to get that opportunity to be able to think outside the box and giving the ultimate beneficiaries more opportunity to generate income.
Thank you. Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, Representatives Dietrich and O'Driscoll, I just want to thank you for working together and bringing forward a bill that actually has some bipartisan cooperation. It's a reform measure that is not an easy issue, but at least it's a real bill, and I think that's a good step forward. I think looking at this broadly, we have lands that are placed in trust for the benefit of school kids in the state, and establishing a legislative commission to deal with this, I think, is a good idea, much like with the pension commission. It makes sense to have people who really know their stuff at the legislature learn about this and have legislation run through that commission. I think it works well with pensions. I don't know why this kind of trustee type arrangement wouldn't also be well suited to that. So I think that's a good idea. The concept of an executive board having sole responsibility here, I think, also makes sense. If you have a trust, then you have trustees, but the responsibility of the trustees is diffuse and dispersed among the legislature, the executive branch, the commissioner, and so forth. That means that really nobody is responsible. And I think by consolidating responsibility in one board and giving them clear authority and responsibility, we make this look more like a trust. And legal cases that have come up over the years on these types of issues, I think, have emphasized the fact that these are to be treated as a real trust. So I think you're really moving in the right direction in a lot of ways. I do have some questions about whether the board itself should be invested in the role of trustee and given fiduciary responsibilities, that basically the state would invest them with those responsibilities as trustees, whether they could be sued by the beneficiaries and so forth. So I think there are some important questions about how this fits together, but the overall direction is a very good one. And I frankly have a question. It just seems to me that this, from the standpoint of government operations, which is what we are focused on this committee, this is a pretty rational and sensible way to arrange responsibility for this particular obligation. And I'd compliment you for continuing to work on it, continuing to bring the bill forward, and accepting reasonable requests for changes. And at some point, I may try to come back and work with you a little bit more on clarifying the responsibilities of the board. But for now, I think the bill is a strong one, and I guess I'd urge members to support it. It seems pretty sensible. The one question I thought the commissioner brought up that was a good one is whether we're duplicating costs and really getting nothing for that, whether the revenue generated by this structure will just cost more money but won't generate that much more. And I wonder if you'd be open to requiring a legislative auditor report within a certain number of years, like we do for legacy, in order to determine whether there actually has been some return on the additional costs involved in setting up this structure.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, as you know, the Legislative Audit Committee is soliciting ideas right now, and I have submitted this as a priority.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, you should learn to not trust legislators and their votes until you have them. So, I mean, it is possible to put it in the bill to ask the auditor to do this, and we've done that with the legacy funds, and I think it's a good approach because I do think we have to answer this question of whether this good idea in theory is actually delivering more money for the additional expense that we're putting into it or not, and requiring the legislative auditor to do that might be a way to establish that.
Good point. Actually, as long as we have you here, Commissioner, I just have one additional question, just because I don't know the answer. I'm wondering, does the DNR allow hunting on trust lands, and are some of the state parks part of trust lands?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the trust lands are open to all public recreation right now, whether it's hunting or bird watching or berry picking or cross-country skiing or anything else.
And I know that there's a cost for hunting licenses and whatnot, and presumably for admittance to state parks, and I'm wondering if there's a portion of that goes to the trust lands, or if you've considered that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, currently there is no payment from the Game and Fish Fund to the trust. That would require legislative action.
Okay, thank you. That's, I guess, one of my concerns, too, because that would seem, like, you know, it seems like if it's trust land, it seems like then it would be owed, some of the payment would be owed, and I don't know what the percentage would be, but it just doesn't seem right to me that there wouldn't be some formula to take account of that. Representative Scalzi?
I've just been thinking, going through all of these things that we're learning, and we've seen this bill before, and I've seen it in environment, so I've been thinking about this for a number of years, but I also serve on the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Government with Representative Beard, and it is a commission. We don't hire a director and set policy, but what we do as a commission is look over the Metropolitan Council, and we're doing some great work as far as how we can do a better job in the future, and Representative Beard has a good bill that I'm part of and I'm working on with him, because certainly there's some things that the state does that aren't always productive, and we feel in that committee that we're taking our responsibility very seriously about making some changes and doing some research with other with the government and with other members, and I can see where this should have a commission. I'm not sure if they should hire a director. Mm. I understand totally the commission part that would do heavy recommendations and maybe craft a bill that would include some of these parts like fire suppression, selling Lakeshore, better management of money. I can certainly see where there should be a commission and a recommendation that could include all of that in bill form. I'm just not sure I want to go with the whole director thing and take it away.
Okay. We've got a couple member questions, and then I just wanted to point out we do have two more folks who want to offer some really brief testimony. So if that's okay, we'll take these two questions and then go to the brief testimony. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I've been sitting here listening to this, and I have some concerns about how this is structured. But as Representative Scalzi pointed out, I served on the Pension Commission. I also served on the Work Comp Advisory Board before. And again, with the Work Comp Advisory Board, it was advisory, and we didn't hire a commissioner or an executive director. We worked through the Department of Labor and Industry. I mean, if we're going to set this up to do this, I mean, I'd have concerns how this is going to get set up. Again, I don't want to duplicate other processes we're already doing. When you and I serve on the Sunset Commission, and one of the things we've looked at is duplication mm-hmm. of services and trying to reduce the size of government by reducing duplication. This, to me, this bill looks like we're increasing that duplication. We're setting up another agency that's going to be doing the same thing that we're already doing. And to me, my looking at it, it's going to cost more money. And so there's going to be less money going into the school trust funds because they're going to be now bearing the cost of this additional bureaucracy that is there that I think is unnecessary because we already have that expertise from the DNR.
Okay. Representative Simon said he'd wait for a minute here. Let's move on to the witnesses, Jody Burr and Eric Hagee. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, and made a note of the be brief, and I will do that. Jody Boer with Education Minnesota, and we just want to go on record on this issue, first of all, and thank Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Dietrich. I know the chief specifically has been working on this a long time. And just to let you all know that we absolutely do support the discussions and the efforts that have been underway on this issue to ensure that we have the best oversight and accountability of these funds for the school kids of Minnesota. And based on this hearing and previous hearings, obviously you all know that there are lots of discussions that still need to take place about how best to do that. We're not here to speak about that. We just wanted to let you know that we do support the discussions and the efforts to make sure that we're doing this in the best way that we can. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you much. Eric Hagee.
Madam Chair and members, Eric Hauge with AFSCME Council 5. We represent roughly 43,000 employees, including a number at the DNR who work in our state parks and fisheries, hatcheries, and wildlife management. I'll be brief. I understand the food trucks are gathering outside. The issue of school trust lands is not something that AFSCME has been too engaged with in the past, but as I looked over this legislation, I'm hoping that can change. This bill could have a drastic impact, positively or negatively, on the work that DNR employees do in Minnesota. We really only have one main concern, and that is that this bill allows the new commission to contract out various duties to a private entity for a variety of functions, including the management of the land. We have experienced staff at the agency able and willing to do this work. So just for the record, we oppose the privatization of the work of our members. It's our hope that going forward we can work with the department and the authors on this bill. Should the bill become law, I think that we can play a role in ensuring that the land is managed as best as it can be by state employees to ensure the best return on investment for our children now and in the future. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Simon.
Thank you. This is a question for the authors, Representatives O'Driscoll and or Dietrich. Just a couple of procedural questions, and if they, I had to step out for a few minutes, so just give me the signal if they've been asked or discussed already. The first one has to do with the comment earlier. I forget who mentioned it, but I wanted to give you a crack at responding. Someone said that we have to remember the role of the State Board of Investment in all of this. What's your response to that? To what extent would this change, if it would at all, the responsibilities of the State Board of Investment?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simon, really what happens is nothing changes from the standpoint of the State Board of Investment, the permitting, as the Commissioner suggested, for the lands. All of those things are going to stay in place. They're being shifted, though, to the new board for management and supervision for the purposes of making sure that the beneficiaries' interests are always kept in the forefront. And as we would continue to move to endeavor to move through, we would work with that board and the State Board of Investment on assets, as well as with the DNR on identifying those properties. We would be engaging the DNR as a partner, not an adversary.
So,
Representative Dietrich.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. If there are any changes for how SBI manages the portfolio, they would need to be constitutional changes. And so we would need a constitutional amendment, is my impression.
Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, so what I'm hearing is status quo, really no change in terms of the SBI. So to what extent does SBI, I'm just trying to figure out because there are a lot of players here, to what extent does SBI then, over the years, this isn't anything against the current board or its members or its administrators, but over time, over decades, to what extent does SBI, if any, bear some responsibility for what you're talking about?
Representative Dietrich.
I think what you're doing is, we need to just make sure that we have separate conversations, somewhat separate conversations, all under the guise of a trust. When we talk about this, it's the management of the lands, and then it is the revenue off of those lands, and then it is the permanent fund where the revenue off of the lands are deposited, and then it is the investment of those funds that creates interest and dividends, and is that is managed, though, and you're right, Representative Simon, this does get very complicated because now MMB gets involved. And in fact, and then they're the ones who certify, look at the DNR costs, and then they distribute the money to the Department of Education, and then the Department of Education distributes it to the schools. So it does, it is a very, and that doesn't even include the separate accounts. We have a Lakeshore lease account, we have a forest assistance account, we have a minerals management account, and that's where all these monies are held while before the DNR certifies or deducts their expenses. So it is very complicated, and this is why I think that this actually is not another bureaucracy. I think what we are dealing with is a bureaucracy that serves a lot of people, and most of the people that are opposed to the bill get very served by this bureaucracy. And I don't want to blame people, but I just need to bring up one more example. You brought up the finance end of it. That has not always worked exactly the way that it's supposed to either. At one point, MMB, actually when it was the first year that I was the advisory committee chair, we got the report from MMB, and they had taken $2.5 million of interest and deposited into the general fund. Mm-hmm. Why? Because point fingers at the legislature. Because the legislature their bill had not taken effect yet. The bill had passed in 2008, did not take effect until 2010. And the first payment to the school districts that were going to stay there had not taken effect. So that $2.5 million just got deposited to the general fund. So there are, when people, you know, oppose the bill and they just say we ought to clean up what is wrong, I challenge them to do that. There are just so many people that benefit from the status quo that I just don't see how that is possible. And if nothing else, just to be honoring our trust obligations and know that somebody is watching the money from the land to the schools and everywhere in between, and knowing that we are doing the best as trustees for the beneficiaries.
Representative Simon.
Just one follow-up question on a procedural matter. On line 8.8 of the Delete Everything Amendment, you have that the board members are going to be confirmed by both the Senate and the House acting separately. I don't know if that's exactly necessary.
What else would you expect out of a House bill?
Of course. But, I mean, other than the regions, and I know here you say acting separately, so we're not going to do the joint convention. Thank goodness for that. But even acting separately, as Representative Winkler reminded me, the only other example, certainly that I can think of, is the Campaign Finance Board. But that's different because there are designated spots for Democrats and designated for Republicans. So no Democrat will vote against a Republican unless there are ethical problems, and vice versa, because of their designated spots. Here I can see it being a lot more political, and I think the more, I guess the bottom line is I would be fine as a House member just leaving it, as we do with commissioners, have it be Senate confirmation. I'm wary of creating more avenues for political mischief, and I don't know if we need that, but.
Madam Chair, may I?
Representative Dietrich?
Yeah, Representative Winkler has been very helpful in the changes in this bill for 3 years now. We've been this Representative Winkler, and I would defer to somebody like him, and who has tracked this issue for quite a while and has the experience and the expertise, and if he would think about that for us and give us some advice, I would greatly appreciate that.
I know where to find it.
Representative Winkler?
We abolish the Senate and the legislation and have it be solely House approval.
Did you want a roll call on that?
That's my considered opinion.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Madam Chair, just if I might add a comment on that, I know we're running short of committee time, and Representative Simon, to that issue, we deliberated as to who should be the approving body, and the genesis behind that was we've got the executive branch who would be having the appointees, who would be the administrative part of that, we've got the legislative part, and then we thought we would try to keep balance because there are fiduciary obligations that constitutionally go to the legislature, and leaving that in the hands of one House and not both, we felt would have been something that would have unfairly handicapped the House. And I would also echo what Representative Dietrich said, the House, but what would we expect?
Madam Chair,
Representative Dietrich?
Yes, one additional comment, because Representative Winkler, you brought up an excellent idea, and that is to have this commission and director audited. And I would like to point out that the state of Utah, their books get audited every year, and they welcome that. They want that. They want that as their level of scrutiny and accountability to the beneficiaries of that account. And I will strongly be a proponent of including that audit, because I have said in other committees, if this does not generate more money to the trust fund, I will be the first one to say we ought to abolish it and just go back to business as was before.
Okay. Representative Murray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich, could you clarify, you may have said this earlier in your testimony, how many dollars do we have with the State Board of Investment, and what is our return on those dollars to the school trust?
Representative Dietrich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a little bit different numbers than the commissioner does, but that's not the first time. I have that our trust fund right now in 2011 is 2012 is $722 million. That's an estimate. And actually, that only, from the numbers that I have, and I might have wrong numbers, it only went up $1 million from last year. And the reason I'm not sure, this could have been projected, and maybe I don't have the most recent projections, but I try to keep up to date on all of this. So anyhow, what that generated to the schools was $23 million. What that will generate to the, they say that is a 3.4% return on the balance.
Madam Chair?
Representative Murray?
Is that the consistent amount that's paid out then each year or in that range?
Representative Dietrich?
Madam Chair, thank you. It is really, this really speaks to what we should have given each of you a copy, and in fact, I will make sure that you get it. Since you are trustees, the legislature, everyone should have this. This is the fund balance, and usually we put it in packets, but I didn't do it this time, and because this is state government finance. But if in, let's just take in 19, 89, we were distributing 33 million to our 34 million to our students. 2010, we're distributing 22 million.
Well, Madam Chair, I would just like to add that I think the same board gives the pensions 8.5% a year, so I'm just wondering why we're only getting 3.5 in our money.
And Representative Dietrich?
Madam Chair, and that is the information that we get from them, but that is on the fund balance, and that is not the return. And then I have seen other documents that we had, like, you could do the math pretty quickly. We distribute $22 million out of 722.
3%.
Yeah. So there are lots of questions to be asked.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Winkler?
Madam Chair, Representative Murray, I just wanted to make sure that we don't, you know, disparage our pension number by talking about this too much. But it's, I mean, one difference is that you have to, the pension investment is a long-term investment, so the return is going to be greater. And the payout every year for the school trust funds requires a certain amount of liquidity and probably some consistency in how much money is being paid out every year. So it could be that the difference in the investment is due to that. But I think it's a good question to ask the State Board of Investment and what their target is, and why that number is what it is. But, I mean, there could be good reasons for it. But, you know, certainly we should hold up the pension funds as models of sound long-term investment.
I agree.
Representative Murray?
Chair, exactly with what Representative Winkler is saying. However, we've been doing this for 150 years, so that's kind of long-term also, I guess. So.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to point out that the 8.5% is the assumption that the Pension Commission has to they have to make. It's not what they're returning. The return is much higher, and that assumption is not set by the Pension Commission. That assumption is set by us, the legislature, and it's in statute. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what they use for their planning as far how much they have to get in there to get the return they need to pay out the pensions.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes, thank you. I just need to also point out that the this fund is the corpus of the fund does not get touched. It stays intact. Capital gains goes back into the fund. So sometimes when you see increases from one year to the next, it is not all total money generated off of the land. And so that can be really deceptive sometimes. And the other thing that I wanted to point out in regards to Representative Scalzi's comments is this is a perpetual trust. No matter who the director is, they will have trust obligations to manage this trust and the land for the short term and the long term. And I don't share the same fear that there is nobody else that can do that besides the DNR. In fact, in the state of Utah, they hired somebody from the DNR, and actually he does an excellent job of balancing the natural resources and the money generated. They have more land in preservation now since he started this job than they had prior to that, and their fund has gone from $100 million to $1 billion in 10 years.
Okay. Representative Quam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've heard this bill in three committees this year. It's a long-reaching and very important bill, and I would ask for a roll call.
Okay, a roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Any other discussion? Representative O'Driscoll, back to you.
Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2244 be passed and just protect the committee administrator goes to the Commission on Ways and Means. Or the committee on Ways and Means.
As amended.
As amended, yes, thank you.
So moved. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pepin.
Aye.
Representative Murray.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Hancock.
Aye.
Representative McFarland.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Simon.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Erdahl.
Aye.
Representative Sanders.
Aye.
Representative Scalzi.
No.
Representative Winkler.
Aye.
There being 11 ayes and 2 nays, the motion does prevail. Congratulations.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Meeting adjourned.